This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio, with talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Dan Mandis. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Appreciate you being here. Gary and Eric, they do return Sunday night, Monday morning. Hope you are doing well. We've got a lot for you tonight. Joe Biden's town hall. We've got, the very few, if any, highlights from that on CNN. Jim Jordan eviscerates Attorney General Merrick Garland after he, of course, as we all know, deemed parents domestic terrorists. And a tragic story out of, it looks like New Mexico, Alec Baldwin. They were out there filming a movie, and it looks like somebody on the set was accidentally killed after a discharged prop gun, again, went off and killed a crew member. This is the story from Fox News. This is, it's not really breaking news at this point. This has been going on the last several hours. Alec Baldwin discharged a prop gun that killed a crew member on the set of his new film, Rust. According to authorities, they say no charges have been filed, according to police. I'm just kind of going to read through this because we've seen this kind of thing happen before. I'm no fan of Alec Baldwin, but this is really sad. An accident on the set of Alec Baldwin's movie Rust at the Bonanza Creek Ranch on the outskirts of Santa Fe, New Mexico, sent two members of the film crew to the hospital. One of them, a woman, has died, according to Fox News. A press release from the Santa Fe Sheriff's Department said deputies were dispatched to the set around 1:50 p.m. in New Mexico time, local time, and the call indicated that an individual had been shot. They said that the prop firearm was being used during the filming when it was discharged by Alec Baldwin, hitting his director of photography Helena Hutchins and director Joel Souza. Detectives are investigating how and what type of projectile was discharged, the sheriff said. According to the media release, one shooting victim, a 42-year-old female, was transported via helicopter to the University of New Mexico Hospital, where she later died, the sheriff's office confirmed. The second victim, 42-year-old male, this is probably the director, was transported by ambulance to another hospital. He's undergoing emergency treatment. A production spokesperson from Rust Movie Productions, LLC, telling Deadline in a statement Thursday that the accident involved the misfire of a prop gun with blanks and that production has been halted for the time being. They say the safety of the cast and crew remains the top priority. What a just weird, bizarre, and very sad story. And again, I'm no fan of Alec Baldwin, but I will tell you that he's got to feel terrible about this. A spokesperson for the department saying that they're still investigating all of this. They're trying to figure out exactly what happened, if any standard protocol was broken. They say that the accident remains under active investigation. Again, no charges have been filed. And so we'll continue to watch this for you tonight on Red Eye Radio. They say representative for Alec Baldwin, as well as representatives for the production company, not immediately responding to Fox News for a request or comment. So just a really sad and bizarre story. Again, out of New Mexico, Alec Baldwin accidentally discharging a prop gun that killed a crew member on the set of his film. So again, we'll keep you updated on that story and a lot more right here on Red Eye Radio. A lot of audio to play for you from Jim Jordan. He is, by the way, one of my favorites on Capitol Hill, of course, Congressman Jim Jordan. And they had Merrick Garland up on the up at the podium, and he is just being eviscerated. By the way, as he should. You know, they're asking him a lot of questions about this whole school board fiasco, where basically what happened is, you no doubt know, Merrick Garland decided to sic the FBI on parents across America, deeming some of these parents as domestic terrorists. And that infuriated a lot of Republicans, of course, as we all know. The parents are upset over the teaching of critical race theory in schools. And so clearly a lot of parents showing anger, a lot of parents showing concern, a dissent, if you will, at the fact that their kids are being taught critical race theory. And I don't care if you're black. I don't care if you're white. Pretty much a lot of folks across the country, many people across the country, have some very serious issues with the teaching of critical race theory. So Jim Jordan had Merrick Garland testifying, and Jordan really, really unleashed on the attorney general and basically the federal government as well. Here's part of what Jordan had to say.
Jefferson said once, tyranny is when the people fear the government. We're there. Sadly, we are there. But I don't think the good people, I don't think the good people of this great country are going to cower and hide. I think your memo, Mr. Attorney General, was the last straw. I think it was the catalyst for a great awakening that is just getting started. Pilots at Southwest Airlines, the Chicago Police Union, parents at school board meetings, Americans are pushing back. Because Americans value freedom.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. Americans do value freedom. And they also value law and order. And they value what America at least used to stand for. And as the congressman said, freedom. And I think that one of the things that we're seeing today is the American people pushing back like we've never seen before, to be perfectly honest with you. And so that's why now you've got the attorney general basically saying, yes, that Americans that are pushing back are domestic terrorists. And one of the things that Jordan pointed out, and he did this very effectively, is that these school boards across the country, it took all of 5 days. And this is important to note. It took all of 5 days for the Biden administration to jump when the school boards sent them the note asking for help, ultimately from the attorney general, to deal with the dissent of these parents showing up at these school board meetings. And Jim Jordan, you know, he's not necessarily shocked, I suppose, but dismayed that the FBI and the attorney general's office was so incredibly quick to go after these parents and write this memo that said that these parents are domestic terrorists.
3 weeks ago, the National School Board Association writes President Biden asking him to involve the FBI in local school board matters. 5 days later, the Attorney General of the United States does just that, does exactly what a political organization asked to be done. 5 days. We've sent Republicans on this committee have sent the Attorney General 13 letters in the last 6 months. It takes weeks and months to get a response. 8 of the letters, we've got nothing. They just gave us the finger, said, we're not going to get back to you. And all our letters were actually sent to the Attorney General.
Yeah. Think about what's going on in the world today. And they're not getting, the Republicans not getting really any real response from the Attorney General's office. But you've got these school boards that claim that they have a problem, which they don't. The problem that these school boards have, if I may, the problem with these school boards is that they're not used to getting pushback from parents. Certainly not the pushback that they're getting now. But the problem is that they're threatening our kids. And ultimately, they're threatening our country and future generations with this crap that they're teaching with critical race theory. So one of the things that they also asked Merrick Garland about is this dedicated and open line of communication regarding the parents. And so what's going on is there is this dedicated, there is this open line of communication where they can narc on parents. They can rat out parents who these school board members say are domestic terrorists. And Jordan calls him out on this, and he really should have called him out.
Where's the dedicated lines of communication with local leaders regarding our southern border?
Right.
Something that frankly is a federal matter.
Yep.
Where's the dedicated lines of communication on violent crime in our cities? Violent crime that has went up in every major urban area where Democrats have defunded the police. Nope, can't do that. Can't do that. The Biden Justice Department is going to go after parents who object to some racist, hate America curriculum.
Yeah, you know, critical race theory, it's something that I find abhorrent. A lot of people find abhorrent. And the fact that they're teaching it across the country, and not only are they teaching this across the country, but they also deny that they're teaching it. They'll say, we're not teaching critical race theory. Well, as a matter of fact, you are. You're just not calling it critical race theory. So when you look at, as the congressman says, when you look at the open, dedicated and open line of communication that the school board members have with the attorney general's office, he brings up all of the things that are going on in this country that really are going south, not only for the president, but for our country. And there is no dedicated and open line of communication. So this tells you the seriousness with which the Attorney General's office in the White House considers this dissent, this anger, this frustration of parents as they go after these schools and the school boards for teaching critical race theory. He also brings up all of this, Jim Jordan does, and he also brings up MS-13 and Russian collusion.
MS-13 can just waltz right across the border, but the Department of Justice, they're going to open up a snitch line on parents.
Mm.
Think about this. The same FBI that Mr. Garland is directing to open dedicated lines of communication for reporting on parents just a few years ago spied on four American citizens associated with President Trump's campaign. Clinton campaign hired Perkins Coie, yep. who hired Fusion GPS, yep. who hired Christopher Steele, yep. who put a bunch of garbage together, yep. gave it to the FBI. They used that as the basis to open up an investigation into a presidential campaign.
Yeah, so I got to tell you, Jim Jordan, he really, really did lay it out. And Merrick Garland, he really doesn't have much of a response. He should have a response. It's not like he didn't know that this was coming, but he didn't really have much of a response. He did deny that he called parents domestic terrorists. So this is something that, of course, will continue to be a storyline, not only tonight, but also over the weekend and next week when Gary and Eric return. What about this accusation of a conflict of interest with Merrick Garland and his son-in-law and critical race theory? So if you know the story, and perhaps you do, perhaps you don't, but there is this critical race theory, this agenda that these companies will sell to school districts and school boards across the country. Well, as it turns out, Merrick Garland's son-in-law, you know, his daughter's husband, makes a crap ton of money selling these lessons to school boards and school districts across the country. So the question is, how is it not that the Attorney General doesn't see this as a conflict of interest? I mean, follow the bouncing ball. You've got all these parents that are criticizing the teaching of critical race theory. Merrick Garland makes a ton of money. His family makes a ton of money selling this very lesson plan to these schools. And somehow he didn't see that as a conflict of interest. Well, Congressman Mike Johnson goes after Merrick Garland in a very big way about this. I'm going to play you that audio coming up next. 866-90-RED-EYE, 866-907-3339.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Radio, thank you very much for being with us. 866-90-RED-EYE is the phone number, 866-907-3339. Dan Madison for Gary and Eric. I've got a pretty long soundbite, and I don't think I have time to run it in this segment of Red Eye Radio. And it's great audio, so I'm going to be able to play it coming up after the bottom of the hour. But it's Congressman Mike Johnson, and he's confronting Merrick Garland, Attorney General Merrick Garland, over this conflict of interest regarding critical race theory. And it's a little longer, so I'm going to play that after the bottom of the hour. That does give me an opportunity to play a little bit of audio from this town hall that was last night, earlier this evening, on CNN. And I've got to tell you, there's one audio bite that I cannot wait to play for you. And basically, it is the president, and he's mocking freedom. And I'm going to play that for you coming up here. But first, I want to play you a couple of other bites where the president says, well, you know what? One of the questions was, will you go to the southern border? This is what he had to say.
Do you have plans to visit the southern border?
I've been there before, and I haven't. I mean, I know it well. I guess I should go down, but uh-huh. the But the whole point of it is I haven't had a whole hell of a lot of time to get down. I've been spending time.
I want to just stop it right there. So when the president says, you know, quote, I haven't had a whole hell of a lot of time to go down to the southern border. You'll recall during the Afghanistan fiasco where he was going down to Delaware. I think it was, you know, two or three weekends right in a row. So Joe Biden has had every opportunity to go down to the southern border. And when you look at what the American people are concerned about, when you look at what the American people are pissed off about, one of the big things is the southern border. So the question that I would have for Joe Biden, do you really care about what the American people feel and are concerned about, or do you not care? I think it is abundantly clear that no, he does not care what is going on in the minds of the American people and what they think about the job that he is doing.
Going around looking at the $900 billion worth of damage done by hurricanes and floods. And
all right, so that is Joe Biden saying, oh, yeah, I don't have time to go down to the border. Who's got time to go down to the border? I've got to go down to, you know, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. I've got to, you know, go back home to Wilmington, Delaware. You know, the president, I don't know if this town hall was a good idea. At some point tonight, I'm going to post a video. It's like a 15 to 20 second video. And the president, it's kind of a bizarre video because he's being asked a question and he's holding his hands out in front of him in fists, both hands. He's holding them out in front of him in fists. And Anderson Cooper is asking the president a question. And as he's got his hands out in front of him in fists, he's sort of looking off into the distance, really, in what I would say is a bizarre kind of way. Now, John is in Reno, Nevada. John, you say that you watched the town hall and you think the president didn't look so well?
Yeah, he looked like he had some of the same illness that he had during the Democrat primary debates. He had that funny look on his face where he just didn't look healthy.
What did you think of his performance? Did you think that he was, coherent? The video clips that I've seen, and I will be honest with you, I've seen some of it, but not all of it. But what was your thoughts on the president's actual performance? Because he always does look a little sickly. I mean, he's clearly, you know, older, not well. I don't believe that his mind is all there. But what did you think of his performance?
I was not impressed. He seemed to concentrate more on being folksy than actually discussing the issues. I wasn't impressed at all. He's been quite a disappointment.
Well, I think that is one thing that the American people can agree on, is that the president has been a big-time disappointment. John, thank you very much for calling there from Reno, Nevada. And when you think about Biden, and when you think about a lot of the things that he promised over the past many, many months during the campaign and then during his presidency, he's broken a lot of promises. One of the big promises that he gave us was that he was going to unite America. He talked about that last night during the town hall. I'm going to play you that audio and comment on it straight ahead. My name is Dan Mandison for Gary Eric. This is Red Eye Radio. Time to check your national forecast.
A series of Pacific storms is expected to impact Northern California and the Pacific Northwest over the next couple of days, bringing much-needed rain. Up to 3 to 4 inches of rain could fall over portions of the region over the week's end and weekend. That's good news for drought relief, but it could mean flash flood trouble for areas of Northern California suffering from burn scars. In the mountainous areas of the Pacific Northwest, that precipitation could fall in the form of some heavy snowfall. A cold front will continue to push through the east on Friday. There's a risk of continued severe weather in the Ohio and Tennessee valleys, along with the central and southern Appalachians. Showers and thunderstorms will move with the front offshore late Friday evening, taking the risk of severe weather with it. On Saturday, a developing low pressure system should bring showers and thunderstorms to the Central Plains and Middle Mississippi Valley and could fire up some severe storms over parts of Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, and Missouri. That's a look at your national forecast. From Red Eye Radio, I'm Bill Rakoff.
phone lines are open. 1-866-907-3339. 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, for Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, here is Dan Mandis.
Appreciate you being here. So a couple of things that I really want to cover tonight. One is the Joe Biden town hall. The other is Merrick Garland, as he was testifying today on Capitol Hill. So this segment, we're going to start there. Mike Johnson, who is a congressman, he really wanted to do a deep dive into this conflict of interest with Merrick Garland. Of course, as you know, what he's doing is he's going after parents who are showing dissent as they complain about and go to school board meetings as they rally to discuss critical race theory and the teaching of critical race theory to our kids. A lot of people, especially conservatives, absolutely disgusted by this. And so the problem with the conflict of interest is that Merrick Garland, his son-in-law, is involved in the peddling, the selling of critical race theory lessons to school boards. So then you've got Garland, who is the guy who is sicking the FBI on these parents that are complaining. It is clearly a conflict of interest. And so the more that you think about that, when this story came out of, what, it was last week, I think, when we started learning about this conflict of interest, not a lot of people covered it. I believe we're going to see a lot more coverage after this conversation between Congressman Mike Johnson and Merrick Garland.
The thing that has concerned many of those parents that are showing up at these school board meetings, the very basis of their objection and their vigorous debate, as you mentioned earlier, is the curricula, the very curricula that your son-in-law is selling. So to millions of Americans, I mean, my constituents, I was home all weekend, I got an earful about this. They're very concerned about that. Subpart E of that federal regulation says an employee of the executive branch is discouraged from engaging in conduct that's likely to affect the financial interest of someone close to them. Your son-in-law, your daughter, clearly meets that definition. And so the question is, did you follow that regulation? Did you have the appropriate agency ethic official look into this? Did you seek guidance as the federal regulation requires?
This memorandum is aimed at violence and threats of violence.
In other words, and I'm going to let this play, trust me, because the audio is awesome. But the thing to notice is that Merrick Garland does not ever answer the question. He just repeats the same talking point.
I understand that, but did you seek ethics counsel before you issued a letter that directly relates to the financial interest of your family? Yes or no?
This memorandum does not relate to the financial interests of anyone.
I take that as a no.
Memorandum is against violence and threats of violence.
Will you, Mr. Attorney General, will you commit to having the appropriate ethics designee review the case and make the results public?
This memorandum is aimed at violence and threats of violence.
I understand your talking point. You're not answering my question, Mr. Attorney General. With all due respect, will you submit to an ethics review of this matter, yes or no?
There's no company in America, or hopefully no law-abiding citizen in America, who believes that threats of violence should not be prevented. There are no conflicts of interest that anyone could have.
According to you, but sir, with due respect, that's the purpose of the federal regulation. We need objective third parties to review our activities. You don't get to make that decision yourself. It doesn't matter. You're the chief law enforcement of this country. This raises questions in the minds of millions of Americans, and your impartiality is being called into question. Why would you not submit to a simple ethics review of that?
I am exquisitely aware of the ethics requirements.
But you're not following them.
I have followed them and lived with them for the last 25 years.
Did you seek an ethics review of this or not?
I'm going to say again, there are no conflicts of interest involved when the Justice Department...
Okay. According to you, I got that. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but you are not respecting our rules, our constitutional norms, and the federal law that directly applies to your activities. This is a great concern. This is why people are losing faith in our institutions. They're losing faith in this Department of Justice. And you and I both know, as constitutional attorneys, that if the people lose their faith in our system of justice, if they lose their faith in the idea that justice is blind, that they're not two standards, that there's one standard of the law, and that every
time of the gentleman has expired.
Ah, Jerry Nadler.
Would the Attorney General like to respond to the innuendo?
No, all I can say is I completely agree that the rule of law and respect for it is essential. And I will always do everything possible to uphold that. And to-
can you imagine this guy on the Supreme Court? So that is Merrick Garland. And I think it's a very legit question regarding the ethics review. Why would the attorney general not at the very least understand that it looks bad? Because clearly it does look bad. And knowing how sensitive of an issue critical race theory is, you would think that he would understand, you know what? I've got to be above reproach. I am the Attorney General of the United States of America, and I need to make sure that the American people trust me, and they trust that there are no conflicts of interest. And so the fact that he refuses to even grant an ethics review or answer the Congressman Johnson's questions, I think to me, just raises all kinds of red flags. You know, one of the things that I've always noticed is that people who refuse to answer a question feels like they're automatically guilty. And I realize that there's a lot of different ways to look at this, but I want to remind you about the Wuhan lab in China. So the Wuhan lab in China, they refuse, as you know, to cooperate with World Health Organization investigations or, frankly, any investigation when the questions are asked, how did that coronavirus escape the lab? What kind of gain-of-function research were you doing at the lab? Is the coronavirus gain-of-function research result that ended up escaping from the lab and destroying the world or destroying the lives of many in the world? And they refused to cooperate. So for me, that just makes them look guilty. Let's go to this ethics review that Merrick Garland refuses to participate in, refuses to allow. To me, given the fact that he sounds like he's refusing the notion of any kind of ethics review, to me that stinks to high heaven. And it really gives me the impression that he's got something to hide. What about you? You think so? You think he's got something to hide? And if he's got something to hide, then to me, that makes it seem like he is incredibly guilty. So we'll have to see if this gains any traction. You know, Jerry Nadler, you know, do you have any comment to the innuendo? That is not an innuendo. That is a direct accusation, Merrick Garland. That is a direct accusation. It clearly feels like there is a conflict of interest as your family peddles critical race theory educational materials as you are going after parents who are protesting those very materials. That seems to be, by definition, a conflict of interest. By the way, speaking of critical race theory, Fox News has this. High concern over what schools are teaching. Majority say it is a major problem that school boards' parents are pushing political agendas, which is exactly what critical race theory is. I'm going to go through some of these numbers next. The phone number is 866-90-RED-EYE, 866-907-3390.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye. It's 866-907-3390. Red Eye Radio, Dan Mandison for Gary and Eric. So critical race theory, very much a part of the conversation today in the news cycle that we are following after the testimony of Merrick Garland on Capitol Hill. We got 73% of Americans really concerned about critical race theory in schools today. I thought this was interesting from Fox News. We mentioned this briefly last night, very briefly last night, so I want to get into some of these numbers. High concern over what schools are teaching. Majorities say it is a major problem that school boards and parents are pushing political agendas. Voters are worried about the classroom, they say. The latest Fox News survey finds 73% of registered voters are extremely or very concerned about what public schools are teaching. You know, it's our future generations. And so when you look at critical race theory, and I know that I don't have to go through the tenets of critical race theory. We all know what it is. When you look at how sinister that these activists, that this agenda, that the Democrats, the progressives, the machine on the left is going after our kids, our future generations, it is incredibly alarming. They say the only issues more concerning to voters these days are inflation and higher prices, of course, and political divisions within the country and health care. 87%, by the way, worried about inflation and higher prices, which is bizarre. It's like only 87%. What are the other 13% worried about? I thought that was interesting. And also political divisions within the country and health care, 76% each. And so when you look at that polling, political divisions within the country, I saw that and I was a little surprised by that because I think that maybe what's going on in America today is a little jarring for those that haven't been paying attention. And maybe I've been watching politics for, you know, far too long that these political divisions, they don't really surprise me all that much because I've seen it since, you know, 2016 when Donald Trump was elected president, that really the country changed. America changed after 2016 because a lot of the things that we used to believe in, we realized that they were not necessarily something that we should believe in. You know, when you look at journalism and the media, for example, I think that the political divisions within the country, I think that the election of Donald Trump really did expose what journalism really was. And it also made journalism a lot worse in the sense that these very, you know, high powered publications, you know, The Washington Post, The New York Times, CNN, MSNBC to a much lesser extent. I don't think people always have known what MSNBC is. But, you know, when you look at the way that they treated Donald Trump, when you look at the way that they treated people that voted for Donald Trump, I think the political divisions within the country exposed all of that. You know, as we like to say, the death of journalism is something that really did, it didn't start in 2016, but it really did, what's the best way to put this? It very much expedited the death of journalism when Donald Trump was elected president because they were triggered. And every time the president was accused of something by the media, whether it was true or not, what they ultimately did was they tweeted on it and they reported on it. And when it turned out not to be true, they realized they made a mistake, but they really didn't care. And I think that's what I was so surprised at is a lot of these organizations that the American people used to trust, used to look up to, used to tune into every single night, read every morning. And then you started to notice that not only were they making mistakes from a journalistic standpoint, but they were also becoming more petulant than ever before. So that's one entity that these political divisions within the country really did expose was journalism. We can also talk about, you know, the world of sports and Colin Kaepernick and the NFL and the NBA and this notion of defunding the police and, you know, Kaepernick with those socks that depicted police officers as pigs. So here we were, a nation in 2016. We had faith in our leaders. Some of us had faith in our leaders. We had faith in journalism. We enjoyed sports. And then sports became politicized. And so all of a sudden now, what we used to do every single Sunday watching football, you've got these guys that decided that they were going to take a knee. And so then on Sundays, what we used to do every single Sunday across America, uniting in our faith and our love of football and sports, was destroyed because they politicized the game. So when we talk about political divisions within the country being a major issue for this country, I think that goes so deep and that goes so personal and it touches so many different areas of our lives. And so when you start talking about how we are so concerned as conservatives about critical race theory, I think what unites us in our in our anger, in our angst, in our concerns about critical race theory is that it really is going after our kids. And that is so incredibly sinister. Not to mention the fact that the historical context, in my opinion, is incredibly dubious with critical race theory, the 1619 Project, and so forth. But when you start going after our kids, and when you start turning our kids against us, parents, conservatives, Republicans, and our country, yes, people are incredibly concerned about that. And so that's why when you see Merrick Garland deciding to say, well, these parents who are voicing their dissent over critical race theory, we've got some problems. Well, we have a problem with you. My name is Dan Mandis, in for Eric and Gary. This is Red Eye Radio.
This hour's news is brought to you by Travel Centers of America, home of World Lens Coffee, the freshest roast on the road.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio, with talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Dan Mandis. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Man, so much to talk about tonight. Appreciate you being here. The phone number is 866-90-RED-EYE. You can find out more about me on the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page. That is where I put all kinds of topics, including something I just saw. And I would invite you to go check it out. It is horrifying. You know, I've got to tell you, and I know that we have a lot of listeners in the city of New York. Can I just tell you, I don't know how you do it. If you live in these cities like Portland, if you live in these cities like Seattle, if you live in these cities like Los Angeles and New York City and San Francisco, I guess the question I would have for you is, how do you do it? How do you live in these cities where there is such horrifying things that are going on? For example, in New York City, there is a video that I have posted and a story from the Daily Mail. It is an exclusive. The horrifying moment a New York City woman is yanked to the ground by her hair in a horrific random daylight street attack as serious assaults spike across the Big Apple. You know, a buddy of mine, believe it or not, is moving to New York. And when he told me that he was moving to New York, one of the first things I said was, well, I hope you're packing. I hope that you know how to protect yourself, because there are horrifying things that are going on in New York City. And the more that we see what's going on in places like New York City and in places like the towns and cities that I just mentioned, the more I wonder, how do people do it? How do people these days live in places like Chicago, for example? And trust me when I say, I do understand, I do realize that it is these kinds of abhorrent crimes that end up capturing the attention of the American people. I do understand that. I do understand that these crimes don't necessarily define these cities. But when you see these kinds of horrific stories and these kinds of horrific videos day after day after day, it does make you realize, why would anybody want to move to a place like, no offense to you New Yorkers, but why would anybody want to move to a place like New York City? So this video, there's a woman who is just walking down the street, and some dude in what looks like now a new sort of random attack. Because we've seen these random attacks, right? So in New York, there's been, I was telling you this story earlier in the week, where a woman just walked up behind another woman and tried to push her in front of a moving train down in the subway of New York City. She just walked down there and she pushed this woman, hoping that she would push her in front of the train. Completely, totally random attack. Now, thank God for the woman, the push came a little late and she ended up just being pushed into the moving train. And so she didn't fall in front of the train. She hit the train. Thank God. And this woman just ended up walking away. Again, a horrific random attack. And then we have these, stories of the knockout game where people are just walking down the streets and some thug walks up and just clocks a 90-year-old woman right on the side of the head. And that's been happening all across America, but specifically in our bigger cities. And now this story, I don't know if this is a new trend. This is the first time that I've seen this kind of a story. And by the way, don't get me going on carjackings. This woman is walking down the street and some dude just runs up full speed behind her, grabs her hair and slams her to the ground. This is what's happening in Democrat-run cities across America. She was viciously assaulted in Manhattan by an unidentified assailant. It's incredibly sad because these used to be, the beacons of America. You know, places like New York City, places like Chicago, places like Los Angeles, everybody wanted to move to the big city. Everybody wanted to take part in the American dream and move to these incredible places. As a radio guy, I get calls all the time, to be perfectly honest, and I try to say this with all modesty. I get calls all the time. I host a radio show in Nashville, Tennessee, and I get calls all the time to go to the bigger city. And you know what? I got two words. No thanks. I like where I live. I like the appreciation of conservative values. I like the appreciation for law and order. And you look at what's happening in these cities. And again, we document these things all the time in talk radio. And the reason why we document these things on talk radio is because very rarely do they document these things in the mainstream media. And the reason why they don't do that is because the mainstream media is always hesitant, never really wants to point out the inadequacies of Democrat rule. Because one of the hallmarks of Democrat rule is no consequences. So you got all these guys that are doing these horrific things and nobody wants to, talk about the fact that there are a lot of problems in these cities. You can talk about the crime. You can talk about the fatherless households in the black community. You can talk about the terrible schools. You can talk about, again, the carjackings, all of these things. And one of the things that I've been mentioning for a long time is bail reform, where you've got some guy that gets arrested, but because, trying to force these guys to come up with bail so that they can get out of jail is somehow racist. So they get out of jail and they end up committing more crimes. There's a shock. You don't hold people accountable, so what happens? They go out and they commit more crimes. And that's when we see these quote-unquote horrifying moments in cities across America where innocent people are being killed, innocent people are being assaulted. And that you've got the left, when we see these stories, you've got the left saying, defund the police, defund the police, defund the police. And every time I talk to people from the bigger cities, they always say to me, man, I just want to get out of here. I just want to move, but I can't. And still people go. Still people go to places like New York City. Still people go to places like Chicago. And listen, I do understand. If you're listening in places like Portland, if you're listening in places like Chicago and New York, I get that these cities still have a lot to offer. I totally get it. Man, you couldn't get me to do this on a dime. I wouldn't. I've lived all across the country. I've lived in New York. I grew up in Los Angeles. I spent 3 years in Denver. But I got to tell you that the way that these cities are disintegrating into crime is incredibly sad. And I know that people who have spent a lifetime in these cities do understand, do realize that these cities are changing. And one of the reasons why these cities are constantly changing for the worse is because, one, Democrat rule. Number two is this inability of the Democrats to admit that they have problems in these cities. You know, the town hall last night, you know where that town hall was, the CNN town hall that I've been talking about? It was in Baltimore. You know what's going on in Baltimore? And Baltimore had an opportunity. Baltimore had a big opportunity to fix their crime-ridden city. Kimberly Klasick, I'm a big fan of Kimberly Klasick. She was running for Congress, and she did that now viral video. She, of course, lost, but she did that video where she's walking the streets of Baltimore. And these streets, they've got, you know, burned out buildings, they've got crime, they've got graffiti, nobody's working, people are being killed. And she said, as a Republican, as a black woman, she said, this is what Democrat rule has brought to this city. So vote for another letter. Vote for a Republican. Give the Republicans a chance to fix this city. And what happened? The fine people of Baltimore voted for, big shock, another Democrat. So it is really sad when you think about what is happening to our country and what is happening to these major American cities, because these are, of course, as everyone knows, these were once great cities that are no more. The phone number is 866-90-RED-EYE, 866-907-3390. I want to say hello to this is Gregory in Washington, D.C. on Red Eye Radio. Hello, Gregory.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, Dan.
Yes, sir.
I would like to circle back to critical race theory. And the problem I have with critical race theory, there's a bunch of problems, but my great-grandfather fought in the Civil War for the Union Army, and he was at Gettysburg. And in all due respect, he did the right thing. But to group every white person as a racist or a supremacist is very, very wrong. Our teachers cannot even teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. I mean, our teachers rank 30th in the world under ability to teach. To touch a subject like this, to teach racism, or teaching racism, or trying to in our schools, is outrageous. It's un-American, and it's unfair. I've got great-grandchildren. I got grandchildren, and I tell them anything that sounds like critical race theory, walk out of the class.
Yeah.
You don't belong there. It's not you. It's somebody else, but it's not you.
Well, you're right. And the thing is, one of the most important things that you said there, and you said a lot of important things. One of the most important things that you said was that these schools can't even teach the basics. These schools can't even teach reading, writing, and arithmetic, yet they're throwing out stuff like critical race theory. And so what is more important to these schools? You know, the basics to get these kids to survive in the real world, or to try to implement, you know, critical race theory and turn these kids into future activists, which to me, that's what they're trying to do. What they're trying to do is put white kids on the defensive, and they're trying to convince, you know, these black kids that they'll frankly never amount to anything simply because of the color of their skin. The term that I keep going back to is insidious. And Gregory, I very much appreciate the call. Dan Mandis with Red Eye Radio right here. And if you have something to say, 866-90-RED-EYE is the phone number. Want to say hello very quickly to Tommy in Middleton, New York, or is that Middletown, New York? I'm not sure. Go ahead, Tommy. Thanks for calling in.
That's Middletown. You're doing a great job. Thanks. So just quickly, I agree with you about CRT hitting our kids. I mean, they've been doing it in the colleges for years, and now they're going to the younger kids. You know, colleges have been brainwashing our kids for years. As far as what you were talking about, if being conflicted, you know, with teaching with your relatives selling the critical race theory, if like, anyone can investigate it. Mm-hmm. Wasn't Merrick Garland the Supreme Court pick, I believe? I mean, this guy's conflicted.
Can you imagine Merrick Garland on the Supreme Court? I mean, yes, he was supposed to be on the Supreme Court, and well, he was up for a nomination. The Republicans wouldn't bring it to a vote. They wouldn't, you know, hold the hearings.
And obviously, but, they did a great thing.
Yeah, that's clearly.
I just want to say, I believe the Democrats, they believe that the ends justify any means. But, you know, they decide what the ends are, which could be money, power, control. But what I think is the congressional Democrats, they're just criminals, I believe. But one of the Democrats of this country, which by and large, they're good people and they mean well. When are they going to wake up that this is not good? The dishonesty of the Democrat Party is not good for anybody. It's not good for them. When are the average American Democrat, like I said, I believe they are good people. They just, they're.
Well, you're right, Tommy, and I appreciate the call. And I will comment on that because right now, as things seem so incredibly bleak, I have never felt more encouraged. And I'm going to tell you why coming up next on Red Eye Radio.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on distracted driving, preparing to drive. Once you start driving, you don't want to become distracted. So make sure to prepare your cab before you hit the road. There are several tasks you can complete before you drive to minimize distractions while you're at the wheel. First, program your destination into your GPS before you start driving. This makes you better prepared for your trip and will help keep your focus on the road. Second, adjust your seat, radio, and mirrors before the drive. Even though these might only require minor adjustments, you don't want to be fidgeting with them once you're driving. Finally, you aren't allowed to reach for your phone while driving, so make sure your Bluetooth device is ready to go in case you need to make or receive a call. Making these adjustments before you begin driving will reduce your risk of a crash. If something needs to be adjusted once you're on the road, safely pull over and then fix the situation. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by National Truck Protection and Premium 2000 Plus, the number one selling aftermarket truck warranties in North America, available at thousands of used truck dealers everywhere.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio, Dan Mandis here in for Gary and Eric, 866-907-3339, 866-90-RED-EYE. Why am I so incredibly encouraged? Going to talk about that after I talk to Bill in Chicago on Red Eye Radio. Thanks for calling, Bill. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? Hear your show quite a bit. I'd like to say something concerning the Democrat Party. You had mentioned how you can't imagine how come they're lacking in these things. I don't believe it's about lacking. It's about the fact that they don't care about anything but their own pocketbooks. Look how rich they are in Congress. They're like millionaires after being there just a few years. Look at AOC. She's a multimillionaire already. You know why? Because of money. Because of people just feeding it to her to get their own way and their own agenda put through so that they don't really care about people. If they did, we would have a Republican president right now. They really care about the people. So I'm appalled at the things going on in this country because of the way they are running things. And I do believe that a wake-up call's coming real, real soon.
All right, Bill, I appreciate that call. And, of course, midterm elections coming in just about a year, as a matter of fact. Why am I so encouraged as our world continues to go to hell in a handbasket? Why am I so encouraged? The reason why I'm encouraged is because people understand what's going on. I mean, you just heard the caller, I think Bill from Chicago. I mean, he is absolutely disgusted. But you know who else is disgusted? Many, many, many millions of Americans. And that's why I'm so encouraged. You know, when Obama was president, he was, doing what Obama did and does. And I used to be so incredibly angry and frustrated. And one of the reasons why I was angry and frustrated was because as he continued to do all of the things that he was doing at the time, the media and the American people and the independents were saying, oh my gosh, he's doing such great things for America. And I was apoplectic. I was like, no, he's not. He wants to turn us into a socialist utopia, you know, all these things. Right now, the American people really do understand how bad things are. That makes me feel really good because it tells me that I'm not off base. You're not off base. We are all incredibly unified in the fact that Joe Biden and the Biden administration and the Democrats are doing a terrible job. And as they continue to do a terrible job, the polling shows that the American people are worried. And for me, that makes me feel incredibly encouraged.
Phone lines are open, 1-866-907-3339, 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, for Gary McNamara and Eric Hartley, here is Dan Mandis.
Appreciate you being here. Well, the big Joe Biden town hall was tonight on CNN. So we like to say it's must-sleep TV because it really wasn't all that exciting. But I do have a couple of audio bites for you. And one of the things that the president talked about was compromise in this country and how that has become kind of a dirty word. This is part of what he had to say.
It's all about compromise. You know, it's compromise become a dirty word, but it's bipartisanship and compromise still has to be possible. When I ran for the president, I said I'm running for three reasons. One, to restore the soul and decency in the country.
Oh,
two,
Lord.
To build the middle class and the working class so they were we built from the middle out. And three, to actually unite the country. And everybody's been saying, well, that's crazy. You can't do it. If we can't eventually unite this country, we're in deep trouble.
All right. So, boy, a few things. I don't even know where to start with this one comment from Biden. First of all, when he says that he ran to whatever it was, restore decency in this country. I don't know about you, but that may have sounded to some people as, you know, poetic and great to hear during the campaign. But now here we are in mid-October, and we have seen the complete and utter train wreck that Joe Biden is. And so it really does ring hollow. And one of the things that I've noticed, and there's a change of attitude in this country where when Biden talks about, and other people too, speak about Donald Trump, and they want to bring up, you know, this investigation, that investigation, January 6th, so on and so forth. I just think that it sounds incredibly hollow now. And it's almost like the Democrats are doing everything they possibly can to grasp for relevance at a time when the Democrat Party feels more and more irrelevant in the sense that they can't seem to get anything done, and the things that they do get done end up to be train wrecks. And when Biden says, oh, we've got to unite this country, well, the polling shows that Biden is uniting this country in the fact that everybody is not approving of the job that he's doing. I mean, for the past couple of months, every single day, we seem to hear about how independents and Republicans and some moderate Democrats, they're not liking what Joe is doing. So, yes, the American people are united against Joe Biden, especially the all-important independents. He is losing independents in a big way. And when Biden says, oh, we've got to unite this country, really, can we talk about, Joe, can we talk about uniting this country? Because last time I checked, you wanted people who have not been vaccinated to starve to death. So no, you're not doing anything to unite this country, Joe. You are dividing this country more than Donald Trump ever did. You know, the more that the man speaks, the less sense that he makes. And when you hear things like, oh, we've got to unite this country. Aw, it's like, you know, who can argue with that? But the words ring hollow when you see what he is doing to divide this country. Yeah, we've got to unite this country. But if you're against vaccinations, then I don't want you to be able to earn a living. I want you to starve and live under an overpass. If you disagree with critical race theory, I'm going to send the Attorney General and the FBI after you. Yeah, that really sounds like he wants to unite the country. It really is a joke. One of the other things that I want to point out, and people are also pointing this out, this is from Fox News. CNN's Biden town hall takes questions from 7 Democrats and only 2 Republicans. Now, I pointed out earlier in the week that when Biden would do these town halls during the campaign, they were positioned as and marketed as and promoted as, no, this is a town hall. And these are people who have not made up their mind as far as who it is that they're going to vote for. And then you find out that the whole thing was a ruse, that it was on NBC. And the people that were asking the questions, they were Democrats. They were Joe Biden supporters. They were being purported to be, either Donald Trump supporters or undecided. But in reality, it turned out that they were essentially, you know, actors, and they were activists within the Democrat Party. So these town halls, they're not real. They're basically propaganda is what they are. And earlier in the week, I was telling you that it was by invitation only. So the people that were involved in this town hall, they were not necessarily people who were independently minded. No, this was invitation only. So the people that were putting this on, you know, the folks there within CNN, which is, frankly, in my opinion, my estimation, part of the Biden administration, this was all set up and they knew who these people are. So it's by invitation only. That's number one. Number two, all the questions were preset. So the questions were preset, which meant that they were set into a teleprompter and all the answers were written for Joe Biden. And so I went through all of the various questions earlier about the very relevant things that Joe Biden would not be asked. You know, a couple of them. Will the intelligence agencies be held responsible for the faulty intelligence that led to those 10 civilians being killed instead of those ISIS jihadists in Afghanistan? Of course, not to mention our 13 members of the military. You know, what about your hypocrisy on the mask mandates? You and Jill walking through that restaurant, everybody else is wearing a mask, but you're not. These are just some of the questions that Joe Biden was not asked because this whole thing was nothing but propaganda. What about going down to the southern border? This is what he had to say about that.
Do you have plans to visit the southern border?
I've been there before and I haven't. I mean, I know it well. I guess I should go down. But the whole point of it is I haven't had a whole hell of a lot of time to get down. I've been spending time going around looking at the $900 billion worth of damage done by hurricanes and floods. And
well, here's the thing. One, Joe Biden has had time to go down to the southern border. Because remember when it was Afghanistan and Afghanistan was imploding, where was Joe Biden every single weekend? Joe Biden every single weekend was in Delaware. So maybe one weekend, instead of going down to Delaware, you could have gotten your butt on a plane and you could have gone down to the southern border. And by the way, fact checkers out there are now trying to figure out, Biden says he's been down to the border, but we can't figure out when that was. Jill Biden has been down to the border, but not Joe Biden. Kamala Harris went to El Paso, but that was nothing more than a photo op. So as far as we can tell, the fact checkers are fact checking Biden and saying, you know, you never really have been down to the southern border. And you did have time to go. He just simply refuses because, as I pointed out at the time, they don't want a photo op of the president down there at the southern border with all of the Obama cages and kids in cages and so forth. So the Biden administration, they want to do everything they can to obfuscate the problem that we have down on the southern border. He was asked about gas prices. There is a story out there today. There is a California town that is looking at $7 gas prices. Everybody knows that gas prices are going up along with pretty much everything else. He was asked about it. This is what he had to say.
So I must tell you, I don't have a near-term answer. There's two things I could do.
That is just confidence building, isn't it? So he stammers for 5 seconds when he's asked about the rising gas prices. He stammers for about 5 seconds, and then he says, I really don't have an answer. Well, that's just great.
So I must tell you, I don't have a near-term answer. There's two things I could do.
Well, maybe you shouldn't have canceled the Keystone Pipeline.
I could go in the petroleum reserve and take out and probably reduce the price of gas, maybe 18 cents or so.
By the way, whenever he stammers, whenever he blinks hard, because whenever he is struggling, he does that hard blinking. I sometimes call him hard blinking Biden. It means that he doesn't really know. He doesn't really have an answer to the question that they're asking. And this was one of those moments during the town hall meeting tonight.
A gallon is still going to be above $3. Mm. And one of the things that I refused to have happen, because I didn't want anybody, I made a commitment, if you pass the stuff I'm talking about, not one single penny in tax would go against anybody making less than $400,000. And so if you notice, these highway bills are not paid for by gas tax.
Uh-huh.
They're paid for by direct expenditures in other areas.
Right.
So the average person doesn't have to pay more. But it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. There's a possibility to be able to bring it down. Depends on a little bit on Saudi Arabia and a few other things that are in the offing.
So I think we're looking at high gas prices and inflation for quite some time, folks. I just hate to tell you that, but I believe that is going to be the case. 866-907-3339. Coming up, what does the President of the United States say about freedom? This is going to horrify you, and it's coming up next on Red Eye Radio.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio, thank you very much for being here. Dan Mandeson for Gary and Eric. They return on Sunday night, Monday morning, 866-907-3339, 866-90-RED-EYE. So the big CNN town hall was tonight, as we like to say, it was must-sleep TV. And Joe Biden had this to say about freedom.
The two things that concern me. One are those who just try to make this a political issue. Freedom. I have the freedom to kill you with my COVID. No, I mean, come on. Freedom.
I mean, listen to the disdain. This is not the first time that Joe Biden has said the word freedom with such absolute disdain. And this goes right back to what we've been saying for, you know, frankly, I mean, a long time. I mean, when I say we, I mean me and during my show in Nashville. And freedom seems to be, in one of these other sound bites I played for you a few minutes ago, the president said that compromise seems to be a dirty word in Washington, D.C. Well, it seems to me the way the president talks about freedom, it seems to me that to the president, freedom is a dirty word. And somebody might want to remind the president that that's pretty much what our country is based on, is freedoms. It's in the Constitution. So when he says the word freedom with such disdain, I think that says a lot about where the president is. Let me play the last part of the soundbite one more time so that you can listen to the way that he He says freedom with such disdain.
I have the freedom to kill you with my COVID. No, I mean, come on. Freedom.
Freedom. Who needs freedom? Oh, and by the way, the whole notion about, well, you know, Republicans and the unvaccinated, you know, they have the freedom to kill you with their COVID. Do you know how silly that sounds? I mean, do you know that when the president talks about freedom and how people have the quote unquote freedom to kill you with their COVID, how unbelievably over the top that is? And by the way, this is an American president who has decided that you should not have the freedom to go out and earn a living if you are unvaccinated. And it goes right back to the same conversation about how Joe Biden and the Democrats view people who are unvaccinated. Because people who are unvaccinated, they're not necessarily doing it, quote unquote, because of their freedom. No. Some will say that. And that's where that disdain that the president talks about comes in. Because you do have some people that are saying that it is their freedom and their right not to get the vaccination, which I totally and completely agree with that notion. But there's other people that will say, well, I can't get the vaccination because of my medical situation or because I have, you know, a religious philosophy or my religious upbringing, my religion forbids me from getting a vaccination. So it's not always just about freedom. You know, you can put that in air quotes, but there's other reasons too. Other folks have already had the coronavirus, and so they feel like they've got the antibodies and they don't need the vaccination. So when Joe Biden says freedom, like it's something to mock, it's something to scorn, somebody might want to remind the American president that America is based on freedom. Americans love our freedom. And the Democrats and this president might want to change their minds on their disdain for freedom and what America is supposed to be all about. 866-907-RED-EYE, 866-907-3339.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio with talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Dan Mandis. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Appreciate you being here. Man, oh man, so much going on. You know, a lot of folks in the media making hay about this surprise party that they held for Kamala Harris. And there's always just, she's a bizarre woman. Can I just say that she is just flat out bizarre and tremendously unlikable? But this is just a strange story, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what happened. So she's going to have this surprise party. Now, we all know what a surprise party is, right? So you walk in, and a whole bunch of people yell, surprise. That's the way that it's supposed to go. Well, then why is it that when she walked into the room, as everyone is, you know, videoing with their phones, she walks into the room, and she, Kamala Harris, is the one that yells surprise.
Surprise!
Did you hear that? So there's silence as everybody's waiting for her to walk in.
Surprise!
And she yells surprise. So I don't really understand how it can be a surprise party when she walks in and she's the one that actually yells surprise.
Surprise!
It's like everything else in the Biden administration, they couldn't even get a surprise birthday party right. And on it goes. By the way, also very bizarre and very awkward. no other way to talk about this. She walks up to her husband. Both of them are wearing masks and they kiss. Wearing masks. Just very strange. You know, I think part of the reason why this story is making news, because to me, you know, there's so much going on in the world today. But this is actually part of a pattern of the Biden administration. You know, it seems to me like Kamala Harris and her role in the Biden administration, it seems so incredibly manufactured. And so it's clear that this birthday party, when she walks in and she's the one that yells surprise, I think it is abundantly clear that she knew that this was a surprise party that she was walking into. And that does she actually not even understand that when you walk into a surprise birthday party, everyone else is supposed to yell surprise? And maybe people are so terrified of Kamala Harris that they didn't know when exactly was the right time to yell surprise. So she went ahead and yelled surprise for everybody else. But, you know, it also this story also reminded me of another really awkward Kamala Harris story.
I just love the idea of exploring the unknown. And then there's other things that we just haven't figured out or discovered yet.
I mean, I can't get enough of this story.
To think about so much that's out there that we still have to learn. Like, I love that. I love that. And so I'm very excited about the Space Council.
Now you remember that was Kamala Harris. She's talking to these kids and the video goes viral. And the video goes viral for so many reasons. But one of the reasons why it went viral is because people were like, Kamala Harris, in the way that she's speaking to these children, it's like she's never even spoken to a child before.
I just love the idea of exploring the unknown. And then there's other things that we just haven't figured out or discovered yet.
People actually thought, when I first heard this audio bite, honest to goodness, folks, I thought she was stoned.
To think about so much that's out there that we still have to learn.
I mean, talk about out there. Kamala Harris, during the filming of this video, clearly she was out there. And then we find out that these kids in this video, they're a bunch of actors. And so the whole thing was concocted. The whole thing turned out to be a lie. And so whether it's this, faux birthday party, surprise birthday party that she walks into and she herself yells surprise, or this video of her talking to kids, they turned out to be actors. They had to audition and the whole thing was scripted, and clearly she has really no idea how to be authentic. She has no idea how to be likable. And somehow the Democrats thought that this would be a good idea to put Kamala Harris in the VP role, eventually to take over for Joe Biden. And now they realize that they have made a terrible mistake. And I think part of this whole conversation regarding the video is that she's been going to classes and she's been, you know, speaking to folks about how to become more likable and more genuine. And the problem with people who go out of their way, you know, people like Kamala Harris, who try to become more genuine, the only thing that they accomplish is when they have to try really hard to be genuine, they only come off as more fake. I mean, it's the same thing with, frankly, radio personalities. You know, oftentimes you sometimes have these radio personalities where, you know, they try to come off as, you know, genuine people, you know, everyday folks. And the more that they try to do that, the more they just come off as, not genuine and fake. Well, it's the same thing with Kamala Harris. She has no idea how to relate to the everyday American. And so whether it's Kamala Harris or Joe Biden, they both have the same problem. The problem that they have is that they lack the ability to identify with the average everyday American. And just from a sheer competency standpoint, to screw up a surprise birthday party and then think that it would be a good idea to release the video when you can tell on the video, she's the one that yelled surprise, and nobody in the vice president's office thought to say, what's wrong with this video? Why is she yelling surprise? I think part of the backstory on this, you remember this, is that, remember the story where Kamala Harris, her office, there was a lot of backbiting, there was a lot of fighting, there was a lot of people that were literally at war with each other, and they talked about the culture of the Harris administration, you know, in her office, where there is a lot of finger pointing, there is a lot of backstabbing, and a lot of people said this comes from the top. This comes from Kamala Harris. And there is a long history with Kamala Harris of abusive behavior. There's a long history going way back to when she was the DA in San Francisco, when she was the Attorney General for the state of California, where people just, it was not a healthy environment to work in. Because of all of the backbiting, because of all of the finger pointing, people were terrified of Kamala Harris. So it's no wonder she's got to bring in experts in, you know, sort of handling the media and how to soften your image. Because if there's one person that needs her image softened, it is Kamala Harris. But she is failing miserably. The incompetence of the Biden administration is just stunning when you think about it. And one of their biggest issues, believe it or not, is Kamala Harris. You know, Biden, one of the things that's out there today is Biden telling the same stories over and over, and they're simply not true. You know, yesterday I played you audio of Joe when he was telling a story about how he was involved in the civil rights movement. And he keeps going down this road, and a lot of folks who are, you know, frankly, Biden watchers, if you will, they keep talking about how it is that Biden keeps retelling the same stories over and over and over again, even though he himself has even admitted now that, no, he was not involved in the civil rights movement. But he keeps saying it again and again. And the reason why he keeps saying it again and again is because he has been lying about the same story for so long that he keeps reverting back to it. And does anybody tell, you know, Lunch Bucket Joe? You know, you've said yourself, you've admitted to yourself and to everyone else, the media, that even though in the past you have said that you were involved in the civil rights movement, you have since said, well, no, I was exaggerating. Because civil rights leaders were saying, we don't remember a young Joe Biden in the, you know, late 50s, early 60s. We don't remember a young Joe Biden participating in those walks and those sit-ins. So Biden had to come clean. But then just the other day, he's giving a speech, a meandering speech, and what did he do? He once again said that he was involved in the civil rights movement. So then the media has to go back and fact-check Joe yet again. And I think it was yesterday, he was talking about his love and his, you know, memories of the taking the Amtrak train between Delaware and Washington, D.C., which he did for many, many years. And he keeps recounting the same story where he had these conversations with, I think it was the conductor on this particular Amtrak train. And he keeps going back to this same story again and again. And then people will say, well, wait a minute, Joe, your timeline doesn't make sense. Because as you keep going on and on about this conversation, this relationship that you had with this Amtrak conductor, well, the timeline doesn't make any sense because the dude had been dead for years. Yet he keeps telling the same story over and over again. And so this administration, whether it is the all-too reality of Joe Biden and his diminishing memory and his faculties that are clearly escaping him, or the unlikability of Kamala Harris, there are a lot of issues that are going on inside of the White House. It is incredibly scary. 866-907-3339, 866-90-RED-EYE. Dan Mandison for Gary and Eric. This is Red Eye Radio.
This is the Marketplace Minute. I'm Justin Howe. The stock market was mostly higher on Thursday. The S&P gained 0.3%, the NASDAQ rose 0.6%, but the Dow ended right where it started. The Federal Reserve is announcing new rules that will prohibit policymakers and senior staff from buying individual securities. The rules will also beef up disclosure requirements. Two Fed officials resigned earlier this year after making controversial trades. Sales of existing homes rose 7% last month, according to the National Association of Realtors. Housing inventory dropped about 1%. Meanwhile, the median price of an existing home is up over 13% from a year ago. And the number of people applying for new unemployment benefits fell last week to 290,000. That is yet another pandemic low. I'm Justin Ho with the Marketplace Minute.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Dan Mandeson for Gary and Eric. Want to say hello to Roger calling in from Kentucky on Red Eye Radio. Roger, thank you for calling in. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, first of all, for everything you do and for telling people the truth about what's going on. And, you know, I think that our country is in the worst shape it's ever been in, and Biden keeps talking like people trust him and everything. I don't understand where they get it from. I think Kamala Harris went to talk to those kids maybe to get some ideas of what to do, you know. But,
you know, one of the Roger, one of the things that I said when we found out that those kids were actors, I said, you know, the one who needs acting lessons is actually Kamala Harris.
Yeah, really, that's true. But you know, they have to hire somebody to do them a surprise party. I mean, these guys would probably have to hire their pallbearers. But I was in Pigeon Forge last week. They've got a Trump store down there. People are lined up buying Trump stuff. I don't understand where Biden thinks he is so popular at. Some of the stuff he does, you'd whip your kid if he done that, you know?
You know, Roger, it's interesting. I was in Pigeon Forge, which for folks who don't know, Roger, I probably may have, you know, passed you on the streets of Pigeon Forge because I was there last week as well. And I saw that Trump store, and it's in East Tennessee. And you're right. I mean, the line was out the door. I don't know if they're telling Joe Biden how incredibly unpopular he is. I think that he's got this cocoon around him where they don't want to give him bad news.
Well, he probably wouldn't understand it if they did. But, you know, you don't see a Biden store anywhere. And the whole time I was down there, I didn't see I've seen one Biden flag. That's it. And I just wonder if he's even on our side. I mean, that's why people won't take a vaccination. You know, they don't trust these people, and they're the ones pushing it. I mean, if, you know, you don't go to a doctor that you don't like and that you don't think is even helping people and listen to his advice. And they're trying to tell people, trust us, trust us.
Well, I think, and Roger, you know, if I may, what I would also submit is that, you know, these are the same people, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, during the campaign, they were all about, you know, well, if there's a vaccine that Donald Trump came up with, there's no way that we're going to take it. Donald Trump has no plan. This has been an absolute disaster. The other thing that they keep doing is they keep saying that the unvaccinated are nothing but these, you know, white Republicans from the suburbs and the outer reaches of the counties. Well, that's simply not true. There's a lot of folks who are black who are unvaccinated as well for, you know, what I would say is obvious reasons. They don't trust the government and vaccines because of the experiments of the past. So this administration, they're constantly lying, and that's part of the problem, is that they don't have any credibility with the American people.
They have none whatsoever, and it's getting worse. I mean, I have a little boy that's fixing to turn 5 years old, and I will not let him take that shot because I don't trust them. I don't trust anything they say, and I don't understand why
But gun sales and ammo sales have been out the roof for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But the people standing in line buying them. I don't know what's going on. I don't know where they're scared. I guess that's more than what it is than anything. They're afraid of what might happen. And we've got a gas station with a big sign pointing toward it. Says, I caused that.
Yeah, and Roger, your cell phone is hit a bad cell, so I appreciate you checking in. But he's right on a number of fronts. As far as gun sales go, we see this often where if we think that an administration is going to start clamping down on gun sales, then guns and ammo, they do tend to go through the roof. You know, what I would say about Biden and what I would say about, whether or not he's, as Roger said, is he on, quote unquote, our side? Is he on the side of America? I believe that he's on the side of America, but I believe that he sees a completely different vision for America than the rest of us. We'll pick up that conversation next. It's time for your national forecast.
A series of Pacific storms is expected to impact Northern California and the Pacific Northwest over the next couple of days, bringing much needed rain. Up to 3 to 4 inches of rain could fall over portions of the region over the week's end and weekend. That's good news for drought relief, but it could mean flash flood trouble for areas of Northern California suffering from burn scars. In the mountainous areas of the Pacific Northwest, that precipitation could fall in the form of some heavy snowfall. A cold front will continue to push through the east on Friday. There's a risk of continued severe weather in the Ohio and Tennessee valleys, along with the central and southern Appalachians. Showers and thunderstorms will move with the front offshore late Friday evening, taking the risk of severe weather with it. On Saturday, a developing low-pressure system should bring showers and thunderstorms to the Central Plains and Middle Mississippi Valley and could fire up some severe storms over parts of Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, and Missouri. That's a look at your national forecast. From Red Eye Radio, I'm Bill Rakoff.
Your forecast is brought to you by Low Viscosity Kendall Super DFE. With increased protection and fuel savings, low viscosity leads to victory. Kendall Motor Oil, you get out what you put in.
Phone lines are open. 1-866-907-3339. 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, for Gary McNamara and Eric Hartley, here is Dan Mandis.
Appreciate you being here and want to say hello to Alan in Knoxville, Tennessee. Alan, thanks for calling Red Eye Radio. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just had one question for you. He keeps talking about freedom. But we don't have a choice to choose whether or not we take this vaccine. They want a mandate on us, but yet women still have the right to choose whether or not they want an abortion.
Yep.
That's also a health issue. So how is it they have rights, but we don't have rights?
Because they're Democrats, they have the media on their side, and they don't really want freedoms for all of the American people, just the ones on their side.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, kind of sad, isn't it, Alan, the place we are these days?
It is sad. I'm a truck driver, actually, and I'm working right now, but I just see things going on. I go in four different states every day, and it's just everywhere. And, the people I talk to, I get the same response on the feeling that I am. Right now I'm dealing with, they're trying to mandate masks for my middle school child who's in school, and my stance is I don't agree with it. I'm sorry, that's my stance. Well, I'm not sorry, but
Alan, the thing, and I appreciate the call very much. And it's funny when people like Alan call, and how you always thank members of the military for their service, right? So when truck drivers call, oh, by the way, I keep forgetting this. If you haven't seen the moon tonight, it is incredible. The last couple of nights, the moon has been just amazing. I was, during the break, I had to you go outside for a second. No, I don't smoke. I heard a weird noise. But I looked up, and the moon just is amazing tonight. So if you haven't looked up, please do so. But when truck drivers call up, and you know, they say they're driving their truck, and so I feel like I want to thank them. Thank you for working, truck drivers. Thank you for delivering our, you know, goods by, you know, with your services across America. Because there is that, 61,000 openings for truck drivers across the country. And one of the things that I've also noticed is, as we are in where we are these days with a lack of people wanting to work, I find myself, not that I've ever been rude to the service industry. So whether it is, you know, you walk into a hotel and, you know, you're talking to the reservationist or the manager of the hotel or the people that work at the hotel or waiters and waitresses and so forth, you know, servers, I feel myself being more and more appreciative for what they do. I go into Target, for example, and I feel like I just want to walk around and thank people for working. Because there's so many people that are refusing to go back to work. And I know what a lot of these people are going through because they've got all these openings. And so these people that are agreeing to work, they're picking up the slack. And so I just feel like, and I went through this when I was on vacation last week, a couple of days in East Tennessee. And I just felt like I wanted to walk around and start thanking people for working. Isn't that bizarre? But it doesn't look like this situation with all of these openings and people refusing to go back to work. It doesn't look like this is going to, you know, get better anytime soon. This is from MSN. I'm going to bring this story up real quick. I just saw it a minute ago. The headline is millions of sidelined workers. They will not be coming back unless the math makes better sense to them. Sidelined workers. Again, this is from MSN. Sidelined workers could become a long-term drag on the U.S. economy, and the recovery, a Fed president warned. They say a mismatch of expectations between workers and employers is also making it harder to fill jobs. Many workers saying they will not return to the workforce until the numbers make more sense. I've got a question for you. If you're one of those workers that's deciding that you're not going to rejoin the workforce, why is it you're not rejoining the workforce? Why is it that you're deciding that you don't want to go back to work? Because I've always been baffled by this, and I do understand there's a lot of really good things to watch on Netflix. I totally get it. But I just wonder. I do understand that, you know, maybe you don't want to go back to work because you're worried about COVID, because you don't want to go back to a low-paying job. It's not really what you want to do. You don't want to work in the service industry anymore. I mean, all of these things I do understand. But I am just curious. If you're a listener to Red Eye Radio, and you're one of those millions of people that are deciding that you are simply not going to go back to work, I want to know what your reason is. And I'm not going to judge you. I just kind of want to pick your brain a little bit. Because I've been a guy who all my life, I've been somebody who not only works one job, but I work multiple jobs. And I do that to this day. I mean, right now, I am a talk show host in Nashville, Tennessee, Super Talk 99.7 WTN, 99.7 WTN, if you'd like to listen in. It's a great radio station, but that is my main job. I'm a talk show host. I run the radio station as well. I'm its program director, and it keeps me very busy. But true to form for me, I also do a myriad of other things as well. I, you know, on the side, I've produced podcasts. I do a lot of fill-in work for, you know, radio stations across the country. And here I am filling in for Gary and Eric on Red Eye Radio. So I do a lot of different things, and I do it because, one, I like to stay busy. That's number one. But number two, I am incredibly motivated to succeed. And I wonder if you're one of those sidelined workers who you've decided that you're not going to go back to work. I just want to know why. Do you not feel that same motivation to succeed? That's number one. And number two, well, then how are you earning a living? How are you, well, because you're not earning a living. So how are you paying your bills? And I realize that, you know, over the past year or so, you've been collecting a lot of money from, you know, the government helping folks out because you've been unemployed. So a lot of people have been, you know, hoarding money, if you will. You know, the eviction moratorium, I think it really did hurt a lot of landlords. But for a lot of people who rent, you know, they were able to not pay rent and save a lot of money. So I'm just wondering, if you're one of these workers that's deciding not to go back to work, no judgment. I'm just really curious as to why. 866-907-3339, 866-90-RED-EYE. Got a lot more straight ahead.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
The big question is, why are people not going back to work? The headline from Business Insider, millions of sidelined workers refusing to come back to work unless the math makes better sense to them. And there's a number of things going on. One is people simply don't want to go back to work. Number two, they're not going to go back to work for the same amount of money that they were making before the pandemic. And number three, they're just looking for the right situation. And so one of the questions I'm asking you is, if you're one of these sidelined workers and you don't want to go back to the office, you don't want to work anymore, what is your reason? Because there's millions of Americans who are frustrated with you because there's a lot of bad service going around in restaurants and so forth because there's not enough people to work the jobs that need to be filled. And that was part of that conversation the other day. Who was it that said that Washington Post reporter, that opinion piece, that said that Americans are spoiled because we've always had great customer service and now here we are with the cargo backlog in the ports and, you know, people refusing to go back to work. And so people like, you know, me and maybe some of you, we are experiencing challenges that we've never experienced before. We can't get tables at restaurants. And sometimes the service isn't all that great because people are not going back to the service industry. And so one of the things I was speaking about before the break, you know, I was talking about how I feel like I want to go around and just start thanking people for actually working in the service industry. And I've become a 25% tipper because I'm actually elated that there's people that are willing to work when there's so many people who are not. So I'm asking a question. If you're one of those people that's decided to, you know, bench yourself and you're not going back to work, I'm genuinely curious as to why. 866-907-3339, 866-90-RED-EYE. Want to say hello to Dave listening in Texas on Red Eye Radio. Dave, thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you, sir. First thing I want to say is thank you to you personally for saying thank you, letting us know that we're appreciated out here. I'm a truck driver, and I've worked all the way through this pandemic or scamdemic. And I think the reason that people don't want to come back to work is they're looking for a work-life balance and something that pays the bills.
Yeah.
I haven't got a pay raise through the whole pandemic. In fact, my money's went down and I work 70 hours a week. I see my wife one day a week for a few hours.
Oh, that's tough, Dave. That is tough.
But, I mean, it's what has to be done at this point. I'm 50 years old, and I've made a lifetime of being gone, so she's used to it. But it's getting harder and harder for me to be away all the time.
Well, Dave, let me ask you, so there's a lot of job openings, but obviously you've thought about, you know, leaving the industry and doing something that'll keep you more local. Have you thought about leaving the industry that you're in and trying to find something that may not pay as much, but at least you'll be able to stay home and see your wife more than one day a week for a couple of hours? I couldn't, Dave, I couldn't, I mean, bless your heart, man. I couldn't do that.
Well, here's the situation is, yes, I've thought about it, but in my part of Texas, I live south of Dallas. There's just no money here. So, I mean, I've got probably one of the better paying jobs that's here. If I took less money, then I couldn't pay my bills.
Yeah. Dave, that's
so
tough.
I'm kind of forced into this.
Yeah, that is tough. And I do wish you the best of luck. That is a heartbreaking story. You know, you got a guy like Dave, and you know his story is familiar. That, you know, a lot of truck drivers have a similar story where they've been trucking for a long time, they've been driving for a long time, and they've built up, you know, a pretty good salary. But then, as he said, you've got that life work balance. But if you don't have other options, well, then what do you do? The only thing that I would say to Dave is, you know, he lives in South Dallas, and I don't know if you can move to, he said south of Dallas. I don't know if you can move to a place where there is more opportunity, but, I mean, that is heartbreaking. You know, there's a lot of people that have decided that, you know what, yeah, this is part of what's going on with me personally right now, is I worked at home for, you know, the better part of a year. And I invested in all of this equipment so that I could broadcast from home and that I could do it in a, you know, good fashion and the broadcast would still sound good. And then all of a sudden the company decides that they want me to come back to work. And I'll be honest with you, I really had a hard time with that. I fought it and I fought it and I fought it. And now that I've been going back to work and I said, fine, you want to see my bright, shiny face come in every single day? I'll do it. I'll come in and I'll do my show and I'll be a professional and I'll do what I'm told. And I thought I was going to hate it. I thought that I was going to be angry. I thought I was going to be miserable every day. I thought that, you know, the roughly $6,000 that I spent on my home studio was going to go to waste. I love going into the office now. I like seeing my bosses. I like seeing my coworkers. And I just feel good going in. So I think that a lot of people, though, they really don't want to go into the office. I think there's a lot of people that became very used to working from home. And so now there's a lot of companies that are saying, well, no, you've got to come back into the office. And I think there's a lot of people that are saying, well, screw you. I'm not going to come back into the office. I want something that gives me more flexibility, and I want something that's going to pay me what I feel like I'm worth. I do believe that that's also a big part of the conversation. 866-907-3339, 866-90-RED-EYE, Dan in for Gary and Eric. This is Red Eye Radio.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.